Hey everybody, I'm Dr. Deb, and welcome to another episode of PTSD and Beyond. Welcome to the PTSD and Beyond podcast, where we give you insights into post-traumatic stress, trauma recovery, healing, and beyond. I'm Dr. Deb Lind, and in each episode, I have a conversation with a guest who will stimulate your mind, touch your heart, and connect with your spirit, and also give you a greater understanding of yourself and others on this healing and recovery journey walked by so many of us before, wounded healers with lived experience and heroes. Hopefully, we'll also provide a glimpse into possibilities and purpose, hope, and inspiration. Thanks for listening and enjoy the podcast. One last thing, guys, before we dive into today's episode, if you'd like an ad-free experience and like early access to new episodes and special events, I want to let you know you can join us at patreon.com. That is patreon.com/PTSD and Beyond. All right, let's do it. Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Deb here with PTSD and Beyond. And I want to ask everybody a question. When you think about finances, what happens with your body? What is happening right now with just hearing the word finances? Or how about money? Anybody stressing out about money and finances? Today's topic, we're going to cover financial trauma and financial stress. And we have an expert in the field. We have Dr. Galen Buckwalter, who is also the president of SciMill and former professor at USC, University of Southern California. And he brings with us over 20 years of experience of researching finances, financial trauma, financial stress. And let's give a heartfelt PTSD and Beyond welcome to Galen. Galen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dr. Deb. Pleasure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, this topic, before we start recording, is really timely with everything that's going on right now. So can you give us a bit of a background about what is financial stress? Why does finances stress us out? And how does it correlate to post-traumatic stress symptoms?
Great question. I first got interested in this when I was working with debt. Are a credit card consolidation company called Payoff, which is now Happy Money. But what we started to realize was, you know, in looking at the profile of our typical customer, was that there was this level of anxiety and fear that seemed unusual. So it really piqued my interest as a psychologist and why people are so anxious that are working with this credit card consolidation company. So we did some very systematic research and looked at the level of stress and anxiety that people are actually experiencing, both who are applying for credit, but people in general. And what we found was that the symptoms they were experiencing were identical to what people are experiencing with PTSD. So we used a PTSD scale, basically, and we found, you know, these people were hypersensitive to, like, you know, if they get a phone call. I've literally seen people, they think, you know, every phone call is going to be a debt collector, and you know, so the phone rings, they jump out of their chair. It's they have nightmares about their finances, about things getting even worse, and thinking about, you know, losing their residents. So all these things end up with putting people into a state that's, like I said, identical to the symptoms that we see in PTSD. I should point out that there, for an official quote unquote diagnosis of PTSD, there has to be a traumatic event that causes that precedes the symptoms. So in that context, it's not the same. Although some people will indicate that, yeah, you know, when I had to declare bankruptcy, that was, you know, pure trauma for me.
Mm-hmm.
That was a precipitating event. So, but typically, it's just kind of the people are experiencing just the inability to pay off all their credit cards every month. And then, you know, they start getting behind on other bills. And then, you know, it's rent and, you know, just robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Right.
It's an ongoing cycle that's just not healthy. And emotionally, it ends up just doing a number of people.
When people think about finances and money, we often think about it that it's transactional. And yet there's this underlying foundation of emotion. Mm-hmm. You know, the fear, the action might be avoidance, but the avoidance is rooted in fear, right? Which is an emotional state. So how can we help people first with addressing emotions? And how can, even with, say, financial planners or, you know, financial service folks that are listening right now, different mm-hmm. professionals, bankers, that mortgage, you know, lenders, there's the question really is twofold. One is, how can we help the person who's experiencing the stress related to finances address emotions? And then the second part of the question is, how can we bring awareness to professionals in the industry to become more trauma and more trauma aware and that component, which I find is missing from service providers. It's everything so transactional, and it's not about the transaction.
It's not. Yeah, it's about the person. Mm-hmm. I'm fortunate enough right now to be working with a debt settlement company called Beyond Finance. And we are working with them to develop an assessment that people can take to understand their level of stress, as well as their personality and how to use their personality to better address their particular stressful situations. So, and in addition, we've worked to develop a series of what are called cognitive behavioral therapy exercises that are delivered via email. Cognitive behavioral therapy may sound like a mouthful, but it's really just helping people use our mind, our thoughts, to better control our emotional response. So much of dysfunctional stress is kind of these learned emotional patterns that we can learn to minimize. I'm not saying this is going to get rid of your financial problems, but just learning to manage the emotional reaction, you know, through simple things like breathing exercise, through what what we call mindfulness, which is a process of really getting in touch with your emotions and realizing, okay, you know, that I'm feeling anxiety, but that's okay. That's normal for this situation. I can deal with it. There's all these simple little tricks that we can practice, we can get good at, that are going to help us take the edge off this, you know, hyper emotionality, the tendency for all of us to really let our emotions kind of run away with us. And from that context, it's a whole lot easier to do the things that we have to do to get in control of our financial life. Finances are hard. You know, a lot of us probably had a little math phobia growing up, that where, you know, it wasn't our favorite subject. And so now we just look at a checkbook and it's like, oh, no thanks. I think I'll go, you know, for a walk with the dog or anything other than, you know, deal with planning finances. But it's part of life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the more that we're stressed down, the more that we're letting our emotions control our thoughts, the harder it is for us to really plan and to take control. So, you know, it's really this chicken and egg, you know, kind of self-reinforcing cycle that we tend to get on. But we encourage people and give people the tools to stop that cycle. Just, you know, okay, we can calm our emotions down, then we can start to control our thinking. So that's one example of a financial services company really putting out products that have the customer in mind. Mm-hmm. And how we can get that to be the norm, that is the million-dollar question. I think ultimately consumers are starting to organize more. I think, you know, podcasts like yours and, you know, a lot of the kind of consumer-oriented blogs and things like that are really helping people say, hey, we don't have to put up with this.
There's a different way. There's another way.
There's absolutely another way. Mm-hmm. And that's what we hope to contribute to. And that's what I'm sure you're doing.
It's beautiful. I want to take us back for a second. You mentioned something about when we were younger and doing math. Maybe it wasn't our favorite subject. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why this caught my eye. I was in a store looking for something for a friend of mine. And what caught my eye was this play kit, this money play kit. Okay. And then I went to another store and again, I saw another play kit of like this cash register thing. And I thought to myself, when I was a kid, I liked playing cash register. I can remember even having for my own kids a cash register in the kitchen where they would take out all the canned goods and they would pretend they were playing, you know, supermarket, right? And I was thinking to myself, if we as children played with money,
And then we get to, and we thought it was fun, right? You're playing with this play money, these play coins. You might even have gotten some coins as a kid. And, you know, you could remember the jingle or even like the crispness of like fresh bills, right? Brand new bills that weren't like, you know, out there in circulation. Maybe you got them at a holiday or a birthday or something, right? And then we have math as a class. Maybe it was not our favorite subject, but we're still playing around with money. We understand the value, the concept, the value of money. And then there's this space of where money has become now a fear. Finances are a fear. How can we get back to the joy in playing with money as we did when we were kids with that cash register? Or even, you know, you ever find money, you're like, oh, I can remember walking. I was probably in second grade and I was walking on the curb and I said to the, you know, friends I was walking with, and some of the kids were older, hey, there's Abraham Lincoln. They all thought I was nuts. Nope. I found a $5 bill. Mm. My dad framed that $5 bill and it hung in my bedroom. Why I'm laughing is because there's some point that in our growing up, that money had a value, and then that value had a fear. How can we get back to the joy and the playing of money while we are on the healing journey of financial trauma and financial stress? How can we embrace and even get reconnected with that joy and that playfulness so that it's not afraid? The fear dissipates because the joy and the playfulness then can help us with planning and taking control of our money and our finances. How do we do that?
Yeah. I think there's a couple of maybe reasons that might develop that we could think about how we could change that. One, I think a lot of us lose touch with the skills that we actually need in today's financial world. So for us to be able to have fun with money, we have to be comfortable with things like variable mortgage rates and, compounding interest and issues like that. And I think our education, by and large, hasn't done a real good job of giving us those basic tools.
Yeah, you ever go get a mortgage?
Yeah.
And all the papers. And then if you really want to sit and read those papers, how lenders are so frustrated with you because they're like, oh, no, this is what it means. And you're like, yeah, no, I want to read what I'm signing. I want to read it. I want to understand it. And I'm going to ask you questions. So I'm comfortable with what I'm signing, but that's a great point about the education component.
Yeah, I think just taking the time to understand those financial basics goes a long way towards helping us, you know, reignite the joy of money. Another issue that I think relates more to almost to the emotional and to how we perceive money is people that have what we call an abundance mindset, that they don't need everything to be happy, that we can enjoy the simple things of life. And we can savor them no matter how much money we have. And I think the mindset of always needing more, even if we're living in, you know, a great house and, you know, our family's happy, you know, our kids are doing well. There's just this nagging kind of feeling in our culture that we're not quite adequate, you know, unless we get a little bit more money. Mm-hmm. And I think the ability to enjoy what we have really can get us back to that joy that we have, that, you know, that you had, you know, you were talking about as a kid of, you know, having a cash register and having, you know, money in the bank. And I mean, those are great things. But yet, rather than counting our blessings, so to speak, it's always the thinking is, oh, it should be more. Mm-hmm. But getting to a point of, all right, you know, we do have basic needs that we have to get covered. Then, you know, let's savor what we have.
I think it's interesting we're having this conversation because one of the things I often come across as an entrepreneur, and then to be part of startup mastermind groups and working with others that were developing, you know, businesses, right? There's always, I want to say an aspiration, but we look at, you know, I have a best-selling book on Amazon. Well, one way I look at some of the other folks that have best-selling books and they have their private jets and their, you know, Rolls Royce and their, you know, plethora of you know, Rolex watches or whatever they're, you know, aspiring to have a Lamborghini or whatever it is, right? And for some reason we put a value on, I want to get to that level. I want to get to that level. And I don't know if there's a way of clarifying for folks that, you know, what is it that's really important? Mm-hmm. Is it the toy or is it the purpose and the meaning and the mission? It's not saying that having things is bad. That's not what it's about.
Not at all.
But people go into debt. And we know this, right? The keeping up with the Joneses.
Yep.
At some point, people struggle and they're suffering to try to, because of trying to attain some sort of perception and image that links back to the sense of belonging and feeling that you belong. And yet they're in such financial despair. Or maybe the financial trauma is rooted because, you know, there's a medical bill with not being insured. And now, I mean, somebody said the other day, well, you're never going to get turned away at a hospital for service. And I said, yeah, but somebody's going to go bankrupt trying to cover that cost. Mm-hmm. That's why people won't go to the doctor. That's why people won't go to the emergency room. They'll wait and wait and wait and wait because they know they're going to get serviced, but they're also going to know that, you know what? They're going to have to pay thousands of dollars for that medical care too.
Right.
Especially for uninsured, underinsured, underemployed.
Yeah. Doctor, you brought up purpose and meaning. And I think from a neuroscience perspective, having purpose and meaning does more good to our actual brain functioning than, you know, any amount of wealth. You know, purpose and meaning, relationships, you know, meaningful relationships where you feel compassion and gratitude. Those are the things that our brain lights up for. And, you know, there might be a short-term effect of, you know, getting a new car or something like that. But that's not going to have a long-term kind of almost restructuring of our brain, like these life goals, like these relationships. So I think keeping that as like our guiding motivation as people, you know, that's what we're all here for.
Right.
The toys are great. But ultimately they're toys. And we're much more than toys.
What information and advice could you share with providers that are listening right now? How they can become educated and mindful on trauma-informed responses as well as services within, say, financial services industries?
I think stay in touch with your podcast, number one. Right?
Thank you.
I think Beyond Finance is another. They're going to be developing a resource center around financial stress. I think there's there's an organization of psychologists that have started around financial trauma and financial stress that I'm sure you can find online. I'll make sure that I get some links to you so that you can post them for people. I think there's still a need for that, because not all providers are looking to, you know, get people into more and more debt and more stress. There are, providers that are looking to be part of the cure. And I think providing those services is going to be increasingly important.
I think so too, especially as, we're, still in a global pandemic and prices of food is just astronomical all over the world.
Yep.
And then we're coming into, at least in the United States and the Western Hemisphere, we're coming up to, winter months, where folks over on the other side and are coming into summer. And some places around the world are experiencing drought. We're in California, I just read today that the amount of water, there's just, not there. And this is only going to continue to grow and grow. So we need to have some sort of systems in place to assist people and to help people and meet people with where they're at. I mean, everybody is at a different place with their journey of healing and their journey of connection, their journey of awareness. One person can say, looking at a calculator just scares the living daylights out of me. Somebody else is saying, I used to be like that too. And now I can work with a calculator. And I've even done my double checking of math, not using Excel. I've done it with paper pencil. So when you listen to the stories, everybody's in a different place. Mm-hmm. As we're getting ready to wrap up here, what are three key things that you'd like to share with our listeners today? And for the person who's listening and you're still with us, thank you very much. I know that this topic is really super important. So Galen, we appreciate you being here and continuing to share your gifts and your insights on financial stress. Other things that you'd like to share with our audience? Again, three things or some core things that you'd like now.
Yeah, I think first one is financial skills. Get the basics covered. Having those frees up so much kind of mental space for you. Just knowing that you're on top of your finances from a purely kind of factual basis. The second is to understand that we all have financial problems at times. So much of financial stress is thinking that we've done something bad, that it's our mistake. That's not the issue. The issue is it's a really hard world. And, you know, to negotiate our way through it, there are going to be hard times financially, and that's okay. Then if you do get into a place where you are feeling just an undue amount of stress, know that there are resources. There are companies like Beyond Finance. There are resources for financial trauma, for financial stress, that you can look for. And it's possible to get ahead of the stress. Give yourself some breathing room to reorganize, to get your finances in order, get back out there. Go at it again.
I love that. It's possible to get ahead of the stress and to go back out there and go at it. I love that. What a wonderful way to say thanks again so much for being on today, Galen. It was a pleasure.
My pleasure, Dr. Deb.
Guys, this is Dr. Deb with PTSD and Beyond. I'm going to have Galen's information in the summary bio, and feel comfortable to reach out to him. If you do reach out, make sure that you say, hey, I heard you on PTSD and Beyond. That way folks can know exactly like, oh, how did you hear about me? It's really helpful to know that. And remember to share, like, comment. If you subscribe and you hit that subscribe button, you get to hear the episode a day ahead. So why not? I mean, you know, you'll get, you know, the in of all the information. And again, thanks again so much, everybody, for being here today and supporting us. And for, again, we have our, 20,000 download. That's really super important, and over 80 countries. So we're just not here in the United States. We're across the pond and beyond. So we'll see each other again next time. Make it a good one, eh?